The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So welcome again, and welcome for those who joined a little later. So when we teachers give a talk or guided meditation, and there's often specific areas of the Dhamma that we highlight, or specific techniques or tools that we can use. And like a few weeks ago, I spoke about how we can work with faith or trust or confidence in the practice, and with doubt on the other hand. And earlier, I once spoke about how to deal with unskillfulness in the world. We've got all these specific areas to look at. And today I want to offer kind of a higher level overview of all these types of skillful means that we have to our disposal in our kind of like in our meditation toolbox, as I like to call it. Since there's not just one way to meditate or one right way or just one type of skillful means, you know, sometimes when we listen to a talk, it seems like, oh, this is the way to go. This is practice. And then we listen to something else, and then it seems like, oh, now I get it. I just need to do this, and then I'm going to be fine. But there's no real one way to go. So it might be useful to have kind of an overview and to see, like, what can we use at what times. Like, in one situation, one tool might be useful, and in another situation, another tool. And it might not even, like, for so different people, different situations might need different things. And so, of course, this can't be a talk about all tools out there. That would be kind of impossible. So these are just some suggestions and ideas on a kind of a broader, higher level. And I want to look at these different types of experiences that we can have, different types of situations that we get ourselves into. And one is the situation where we feel overwhelmed. What do we do? Another is when we, when there's some unwholesomeness present, but not being overwhelmed. And the third situation is when we feel okay or at ease or wholesome. And so I want to look at these different situations and what do we do? What are the skillful means for each of these situations? And so the basis for all of these three situations that we can get into is, of course, mindfulness or awareness. Our Vipassana practice, as we can also call it. And I want to quote Gil Fronsdal in his book, The Issue at Hand. In the intro, he has this beautiful simile, and it doesn't say where it's coming from, but I'll just read a little story to you. It says, once upon a time, long ago, people walked about barefoot. One day, the queen, walking across a rock field, cut her foot on a sharp stone. Annoyed, she called together her ministers and ordered the queendom carpeted with leather. And so one wise minister stepped forward and suggested an easier way. So he said, rather than covering the entire realm, let's cover the soles of everyone's feet. And so the queen agreed, and that was the origin of shoes. And so it seems a little silly, right, to cover the whole queendom with leather to protect their feet. And so in the same way, what often can happen is that our strategies, and this is still from Gil, for living, are attempts to cover over our world. And Gil says a much more effective way of living is to learn to take care of our point of direct contact with the world. So, and end of Gil. And I really love this simile of the difference between this inclination to fix the whole world, like we all have. And we want the world to change. We want the outside to change so that we can feel good. And we want that there are no wars, or we want that there's no climate change, or we want other people to change. Like, I sometimes want my partner to change so that I can feel good, right? That if she's not acting like this, then I can feel good. So, but that doesn't really work like that in general, right? So what Vipassana does, what mindfulness awareness does, is it invites us to look at what is happening in our inner world and to how are we relating to the outside world. And so if we turn inwards towards what's happening inside, then we can look at what we do have control over, which is ourselves, our own inner responses to whatever is happening. And we don't have any control over what this other person is doing or what is happening in their world, usually. So this is a really great point of contact, a great point of where we can contact what is possible to change, what is possible to work on or develop wholesomeness in. And so this is our foundation, this Vipassana, our mindfulness practice. And the mindfulness practice, to give a very concise definition, is to know what is happening as it is happening. So we know what is happening while it is happening. That's what mindfulness is about. Awareness of what is occurring in the present moment in body and mind. And often what we try when we do the Vipassana practice or the mindfulness practice is we try to be with whatever is arising without the need for it to be different. And I say try, or kind of an intention. It's more of an intention because, you know, we usually are going to fight reality at some point. We are not going to be always content and equanimous with whatever is happening. And sometimes what is happening is that we want things to be different than they are, or we want others to be different than they are. And so our job then is to just notice that that is what is happening, wanting things to be different than they are. And so this is the kind of the foundation for all that we're doing in this practice, the Vipassana foundation, the mindfulness foundation. And the foundation for all of the other skillful means, if we don't have any awareness, if we're not mindful of what is happening in our inner worlds, and if we get caught up in the outer world, trying to change that, then yeah, we can't do anything else. So this is really our basis. And so when we look at the different tools for different situations that I was talking about, then it's good to know that, you know, assess what is useful for you. And you can experiment with it, you can play with it, see what's happening, pay attention to the feedback, like what happens, the feedback of what's happening when you use a certain tool. And by trying it out, by playing with it, we can gain some wisdom and we can learn to trust ourselves in our way of holding these tools. And so what do we do when there's like a challenging situation? For example, a situation where we actually feel overwhelmed by our emotions or by what is happening. And this can be in response to the world, but the overwhelm is in our own being. It can be also old stuff coming up, or some major life event that happens. You know, if someone that we love passes away, or we lose our job, or any other significant life event can really throw us off in a major way. And so, I always find it important to acknowledge that sometimes, you know, this mindfulness practice, you know, might not be the best way to go. Sometimes we might need actual professional support, like a psychologist or psychotherapist or a body worker, or, you know, some sort of modality like that. So that's good to keep in mind that we don't always have to do it all by ourselves. It can be very healthy to find support. But if, yeah, apart from that, aside from that, if we do want to use the Buddhist tools when we feel overwhelmed, then it can be really useful to direct our attention to the body if that is a safe place to be at that time. Because the body can often really serve as a stable anchor for a lot of us. And when we are overwhelmed by emotions, just anchoring ourselves in our body can really help us. And there are several ways we can do that. We can use several ways that we can use the body. And of course, the breath is a very well-known method. Just focus on the breath. It's very simple, just noticing the in and out breath at the nostrils or in the belly or in the chest, wherever we feel it's easeful. And for the moment, or for whatever, how many minutes, or half an hour, or the whole day, not paying attention to this overwhelming emotion can really help for the emotions to calm in the background. I used to bike to school when I was living back in the Netherlands. I was growing up in the Netherlands, and there was a lot of rain. Some of you in Europe might know. So I had to bike, rain or shine, it didn't matter. I just had to bike to school. So sometimes the rain would really come down really hard, or even worse, sometimes there was hail, which is really painful. And so me and my classmates, we would sometimes seek shelter in like a covered bus stop or under a bridge, or some other place where we could, be sheltered for a little bit, waiting for the worst of the rain or the hail to stop, or to pass. And I like that as a simile to using the body or the breath to as a way to seek shelter from our emotions, from the overwhelm. So when we distract ourselves, we basically seek shelter in a way. So distraction, I think I used that word also in the guided meditation, but maybe shelter is a more, helpful way to look at it. It's like sheltering from overwhelming emotions. And so when we pay attention to something else for a while and not the overwhelming emotion, then the emotion can settle a little bit in the background. And then when the worst is over, we can decide to check back in with our Vipassana practice, with our mindfulness practice. Like, how are we doing now? How's the body feeling and how's the mind feeling? And sometimes people think that this distracting ourselves is kind of like cheating. But actually, the Buddha encouraged this in the suttas as a skillful means to use whenever, whenever we think that can help us. And there's no right or wrong way to do this. It's like we can try it out and play with it, like I said. And so the Buddha says in the Majjhima Nikaya, he says, when harmful, unwholesome thoughts connected with desire, aversion, and delusion arise, then one is to shift one's attention from that object of awareness to another object of awareness that is connected with something wholesome. And when one does that, those harmful and unwholesome thoughts are abandoned and they disappear. From their abandoning, the mind becomes internally stable, settled, unified, and concentrated. End quote. We have permission from the Buddha to seek distraction, to seek something else, to shelter from the storm. And so I'm using the breath so far as our shelter, but there are so many different alternatives that we can use as our shelter, like mindfulness of contact points of the body. Which are, for example, the feet on the floor or the buttocks, if you're sitting in a chair or on a cushion or bench. And then the hands, so you can alternate between those contact points. Pay some attention to the feet for 5 to 10 seconds, and then to the buttocks, and then to the hands, and back to the feet, buttocks, hands. Can be really grounding and stabilizing. Another approach could be a body scan. And I think many of you are familiar with body scans. There are also, if you type in on the internet, body scan, guided body scan, you get a ton. So those are some body approaches: the contact points, the body scan, the breath. But there are times when maybe the body is not like the safest or most easeful place to be. Like if there's pain in the body or illness or something like that. And then, it's also fine to use other sense doors, like seeing or hearing. Like, I don't know, maybe you're familiar with what Andrea Fella sometimes teaches, which is a method for the visual field that I found very helpful to redirect the attention. And in her method, you focus on the room where you're in, and then on where two lines meet in the room. For example, where two walls meet, or where the wall and the ceiling meet, or where a cabinet and a wall meet, or like a drawer of a cabinet, or you kind of see where there's different lines meeting, and then you kind of intensely focus your attention on those contact points, those where those lines meet. Like really fully, wholeheartedly put all your attention there. And I once applied this method for physical pain, so that could also be an option if you're in a lot of physical pain. And I had, like, was one of the worst pains I've ever had. And I remember this exercise, and I focused on these points in the room over and over again, and that really helped me to, for the pain to be a bit more in the background, so it wasn't as overwhelming. And so it helped me to bear the pain for, the time that it took for the painkiller to kick in. And so this can be a great exercise too. So this is the visual field, using the visual field. And you can do something similar probably with auditory. I haven't tried that out, but I can imagine that you can use this with auditory and like really attentively listening to certain sounds. You can even put some music on or some calming brainwave music or something like that. Or whatever draws your interest. So those are some other alternative shelters next to the body. And another one I want to name is the four Brahmaviharas. So the loving kindness, the Karuna, or the loving kindness, the metta, and the Karuna, the compassion. And then the sympathetic joy, the mudita, and the equanimity, or upekkha. And those are also classic ways to seek shelter. And that's also something that the Buddha recommends in the suttas to, especially when there's, for example, anger or anxiety, to use metta or loving kindness. That's what he advises. If there's cruelty coming up in the mind, then he advises, for example, compassion. So we can use those too. And I've used that many times too, using the metta or the karuna practice. So the loving kindness or the compassion practice. When there are certain feelings of maybe sadness or anxiety coming up, or even anger. And we can use the practice for ourselves or for another being, that's easy. It can be really helpful. And sometimes it takes me like 10 minutes or half an hour of generating these feelings of kindness and compassion before it starts to shift. And sometimes it doesn't shift at all. But it can be a real support, and it can be something we can try out. And so we are welcome, really welcome, to use any of these distractions or shelters, or however we want to call them. And the breath and the body in the form of the contact points or the body scan, the visual or auditory field, or those Brahmavihara practices. And Sayadaw Utechaniya, Burmese monk, he says, pick whatever object serves you best. Only you will know. So experiment and find what works for you. It could be the breath or the sensation of the whole body or the sensation of one finger touching another. It could be a memory that brings you joy. It could be a different object each time. Use whatever makes you feel grounded and brings you to the present moment as fast as possible right now. The most important thing is that in these moments when you are calming the mind, not to allow anything that frazzles the mind. Don't let anything in that unsettles the mind. So that's what Sayadaw says. And he names a few other ones that I didn't name. There are many, of course, so don't feel like you can't do anything else. There's lots of ways to do this. And then eventually we find ourselves in a situation where we are no longer overwhelmed and we perceive the world a bit more clearly. And there might still be unpleasant feelings, some unwholesomeness present, like maybe some anger or some sadness or some helplessness or fear or whatever it is for us. And in that case, then we can, of course, just use our Vipassana practice, like I was saying in the beginning, just simply observing what is happening, just letting arise whatever wants to arise. And we also have another choice. We can also become a bit more active. So the Vipassana is kind of a passive way in a sense to just let our things arise. But there are some active things we can do too as a choice. That's just an option. It's not a necessity, of course. And so one of the things we can do is to start investigate our experience. And we can do that by letting investigative questions arise. And so these questions can help us to understand our mind and body better. And through these questions, understanding and wisdom can slowly start to emerge in our experience. And Sayadaw Utejaneya emphasizes that we meditate to understand the mind, not to get rid of a problem. And so if we notice, these unwholesome states, then we might find ourselves trying to get rid of them. But it might be a more helpful approach to use those investigative questions to start understanding those states of mind. Like, why is it arising? What can I learn from it? What is it that I don't want to experience? Like, there's these kind of questions that we can kind of drop into the body-mind system without trying to seek an immediate answer. So these are questions for the unconscious mind to engage with. It's not something we're going to think about. It's really about dropping it in and letting it go and just continue with our normal awareness practice. And there might be no answer arising, or maybe the answer arises tomorrow or in 2 weeks. We don't know. We let it organically evolve. So if we do this kind of practice, then it's important to be not attached to any answer arising. And so another way to be a bit more active is through what the Buddha encourages us in the Noble Eightfold Path, in the sixth step. It's about wise effort. And the Buddha encourages us to let go of unwholesomeness and to cultivate wholesome mental states in this step of the Noble Eightfold Path. And there are four of those efforts. And in brief, they are the effort to abandon unwholesome states, the effort to prevent unwholesome states from arising, and then the effort to let wholesome states arise. And the effort, the fourth one, to let wholesome states grow and flourish if they are present. And so these are really powerful instructions. And I think it's a little bit too much for this talk to go into them, but I'm contemplating to maybe do a series on them in the spring, this spring. So they're really wonderful ways to practice and really great tools that we can use on our path towards more and more wholesomeness. And so, when we are experiencing these unhelpful, unpleasant, unwholesome mental states that are not so overwhelming, then we can apply the Vipassana meditation, the awareness as usual. And we can also choose to be more active. So, with the investigative questions or to use the wise effort aspects that the Buddha mentions. And then the third situation I wanted to talk about was when we feel good and joyful and in the flow and just easeful. Or maybe we are experiencing calm or relaxation or another wholesome feeling. And so the first thing I want to say is to enjoy that. That's very important because we tend to skip over it because we think, oh, this meditation is about hard work. We need to get through all our, childhood trauma, and we need to work hard. And if I'm not feeling anything unwholesome, then I'm not really doing the practice. But that's not actually the goal of the meditation, I think, because a meditation will just bring up what it brings up. And it can be something difficult and unwholesome, but it can also be something wholesome and beautiful. So we will have both. We'll have both the difficulty and the pleasant experiences as well. So meditation is just like life. It can bring up the good and the bad, so to speak. There's no real good or bad, of course, but the wholesome and the unwholesome. And Sayadaw Utechaneya, he says, when you are in a positive frame of mind, it is important to recognize it. Recognition tends to strengthen wholesome states of mind. So yeah, it's important to recognize it. And because if we do skip over it, there's no possibility to strengthen it. And that's what Sayadaw says. When we recognize it, it tends to strengthen the wholesome state. And so actually we need those wholesome experiences, those pleasant experiences to support us on our path and to motivate us to continue meditating. So yeah, please enjoy them and please yeah, use them in your practice. Feel nourished by them. And of course there is the pitfall of the attachment that we become attached to these pleasant states. And, if we had, for example, a peaceful meditation session, then we want the next time that we meditate, we also want a peaceful meditation session. So we can just notice that, oh, wait, there's desire. Desire for this pleasant thing to arise again. So the key is to be aware of these tendencies of attachment, these desires, or can maybe even manifest as aversion towards not being peaceful right now, for example. And we can allow those desires and aversions to exist and just use our meditation practice to work with them. And then the nice thing is about the wholesome, pleasant states is that we can even be a little active with those too. We can use investigative question for the wholesome states. Like we can inquire, oh, what causes and conditions led to the arising of this wholesome state? And that can help us to gain insight into what leads to wholesomeness and how can we maybe in the future put in more conditions that lead to more wholesomeness. So to gain that insight. And for example, what I found over the years of practice is that the more I can let go of wanting things to be different, the more wholesome states arise. And if something that is unwholesome arises, like anger or frustration, the more I can let that be as it is without trying to make it different or push it away, the more it can move through me and make room for wholesome states again. So if we start to investigate that, we can start to see those patterns, and maybe it works different for you, so you can see how it works in your heart mind. And so the key with all of these tools is just to experiment and see what works and what doesn't work, what types of situations need what kind of tool for you, because we're all a little different. So we all need something different at different times. And so there are many, many different other tools that I haven't mentioned, of course, but this is kind of a broad overview, of how and when we can use some types of tools. I like the tools that I provided for shelter. when we are overwhelmed. And the breath, the body in general, the visual or the auditory fields or the Brahmaviharas can be really supportive when we're overwhelmed. Or the tools that can support us when we don't feel overwhelmed, but just kind of feel, a bit unwholesome, or like some unwholesome qualities have arisen, then we can just use our Vipassana practice. Or we can use the investigation questions or the teachings on the wise effort, which I might offer some more teachings on later on this spring. And then the tools that we can use when we feel wholesome, when we feel joy or calmness or peace, that just enjoying that and feeling nourished by it. And then also using the investigation tool, looking at the causes and conditions. And so each of us already has a lot of wisdom in us, and we can gradually start to trust our own inner wisdom over time and be gentle and kind towards ourselves. With every choice we make in our meditation process, whatever tool we use, even if it doesn't turn out as well as we hoped, we can hopefully be kind and gentle with ourselves. And so I want to end with a quote from the meditation teacher Sylvia Boorstein. She says, "Mindfulness meditation doesn't change life. Life remains as fragile and unpredictable as ever. Meditation changes the heart's capacity to accept life as it is."